This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Financial markets are taking stock today after rocketing higher on positive developments for a COVID-19 vaccine. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Hopes for a vaccine to combat this pandemic pushed global shares to new heights yesterday when Pfizer said early data showed its vaccine is 90% effective, though U.S. President-elect Joe Biden tempered some of that optimism with a reality check that widespread vaccination is still many months away. Some of that momentum is continuing this morning. The Pan-European Stock 600 Index is up 0.3%, with gains in banking, travel, and energy shares. Key benchmarks in Asia closed up about 1%. Now, focus turns to confidence among the public that a rapidly developed vaccine will be safe and effective. As part of our ongoing fast-track coverage about the complexities of delivering a vaccine to the world, I spoke to Heidi Larson, who is director of the Vaccine Confidence Project, which studies public sentiment toward immunization programs.
We see that, I would say, in the UK, 54% say they would take the vaccine once it's proven safe and effective, and I think it's 42% in the US. It kind of depends how threatened people feel.
Is that confidence what you usually see in vaccine programs?
No, confidence is usually for childhood vaccines is generally higher. It depends on the vaccines. Some people have issues with vaccines in general, but most of the time it's usually one vaccine or some ingredient in a vaccine or something specific.
So you're constantly monitoring social media and taking the temperature of the public toward vaccine programs. With COVID-19, what is the biggest concern?
Safety. I think they also have questions about effectiveness. Is it going to work? Most of these vaccines, there's one that I'm aware of that's one dose, but most of them are two doses. I think people's biggest anxiety is the newness of the vaccine. That was an issue even around the H1N1 vaccine in 2009.
So with these concerns, how big of a problem is misinformation around a vaccine program?
Well, we already see it circulating, and we kind of thought and hoped maybe that given the gravity of COVID, that some of the more skeptical people around vaccines might change their view on the value of the vaccines. But it's ironically, I guess, in some ways, gone the other way. I think it's because of the hyper uncertainty that there's been an amplification of misinformation and overt protests joining up with the anti-lockdown, anti-mask. But most of that is about not wanting to be told what to do by government. It's less specific to the ingredients and the safety of the vaccine.
So what can vaccine manufacturers, perhaps health officials, do to increase public trust? Should that work be starting now or once a vaccine is approved?
Oh, absolutely now. Without having the specific data about the vaccine, I think some of the health authorities have been a bit hesitant to start talking about any specifics of a vaccine. But on the other hand, I think just starting those conversations with the public, listening to their concerns, I think we really need to get moving on that because we can't wait until people are in line to get a vaccine and then start the questioning there.
Heidi Larson, director of the Vaccine Confidence Project. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks.
Positive news from Pfizer yesterday, news today now that Brazilian health authorities have suspended clinical trials of the Chinese CoronaVac vaccine. The Brazilian company organizing the trial said there had been a death in October, but that it wasn't related to the vaccine. Climate is a top priority for President-elect Joe Biden, who has vowed to return America to the Paris Climate Agreement and make the U.S. carbon neutral by 2050. This week, Mark Carney, who is former head of the Bank of England, now the UN's climate envoy, is urging the business community to seize on the global economy's transition to a low-carbon future. Richard Murphy at Sheffield University explains how essential business is in facilitating that shift.
Governments provide us with services, but business makes what we consume. And it is, of course, consumption that drives most of our carbon consumption. So we have to change the way that business works if we are going to tackle the carbon problem we've got and create the low carbon environment that we need.
And green bonds have become a new financial tool to do this, haven't they? The UK just yesterday unveiled its first green bonds to fund low carbon infrastructure projects. Do you think these kinds of instruments, though, actually work?
Look, we don't need green bonds because, as we know, governments can fund themselves at present using quantitative easing. But there are in the world at present vast quantities of savings, and they've actually gone up during the COVID crisis. And people want to know that their money is doing something good. Now, this is where green bonds come into play, because what they provide is an opportunity to align the savers' interests with the interests of society. Is it for housing renovation? Is it for new energy transmission? So that we can actually, in a sense, use this as a voting mechanism to understand people's priorities. We know that businesses are really short of capital at present, so government needs to help them. And through the provision of this bond finance, we can drive towards the low carbon economy.
We've seen many countries, the US, China, France, even the European Central Bank, make these green bond offerings. Do you think there's enough demand for them? Is the market big enough?
If people understand that the funds really will be used for green purpose. So we've got to be sure that if they say they're using it for green investment, they really do have a very tight criteria. But I happen to believe the government should do something else to make that happen as well. And that something else is to actually look at how tax reliefs and incentives for savings are provided. That can be pension schemes, it can be specific saving schemes. These green bonds should attract some of that favourable tax incentive and maybe have it withdrawn from conventional bonds to balance the equation up. If that is done, then I believe we would get the funding coming into these bonds without any doubt at all.
So do you think governments should, instead of offering green bonds, just outline higher spending priorities on greener initiatives?
The two are not contradictory to each other. I think government should have higher spending priorities on green initiatives because they could, at the present time, use QE to fund that instead. But what I believe is important is to take society with us. Let people align their goals for saving with the government's desires and businesses' desire for capital to deliver the green transition. It's a virtuous circle.
Richard Murphy from Sheffield University. Thanks for your time.
No problem.
Finally, a word we've become all too familiar with is now Collins Dictionary's Word of the Year. It's lockdown, and usage has rocketed 6,000%. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.